Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Hello, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me on this episode where I have guest Jonard Soley, and we're going to discuss the life and career of his father, the legendary wrestling broadcaster Gordon Soley. We have that interview coming up in just a bit. I, like many of you, I watched the recent Mr. McMahon series on Netflix, and you know, I thought it was okay. It was entertaining. There was no bombshells or nothing groundbreaking for those of us who are wrestling fans and we kind of keep track of the news and rumors. So I don't see anything that was, you know, that earth shattering in there for us. I thought that Tony Atlas was super entertaining. And some of the footage that they used in there, it was fun to see. There was a couple, you know, little bits and pieces here that I don't think were super available before. But so it was fun to see those. So, you know, it's okay. It's something. And hopefully, you know, maybe some more of the casual viewer, mainstream viewers that aren't aware of some of this stuff will see it and their eyes kind of be open to some of this stuff. So my appearance on Regional Wrestling with Ray Russell is out now. We give an overview of the WWA, of course. So be sure to check that out on your favorite podcast platform or at WrestleCopia.com. And make sure you subscribe to Regional Wrestling because, number one, they have lots of great episodes, great shows going on there where they talk, you know, Georgia, UWF, Memphis, all kinds of other stuff. It's a fun podcast, a very enjoyable listen. So make sure you subscribe to it for that. But also because there will be more future episodes with me on there doing covering the WWA. So you'll want to subscribe for that as well. I want to thank everybody for all the great reception to the last episode of Wrestling Nostalgia, which had Baron Von Raschke in only his second podcast interview. If you haven't listened to it yet, be sure you do. Baron was super fun, super entertaining, had so much energy in life for, you know, I mean, he's 84 and man, it was fantastic. And it was so great, such an honor to talk to him. So make sure you go and check that out if you have not already. And if you go to YouTube, my YouTube channel, there is video of the interview. I did put the video version up so that you can see Baron in all his glory as we chat. All right, so let's take a break. And when we come back, I'll have my guest, Jonard Soley. So stick around.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85. Three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to the Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop. Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. and you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guys for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network? Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at R-A-S-S-L-I-N Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade? So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
This is Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. Hello, I am one of your friends, Dave. I am one of the co-hosts of Listen to Their Screams with my friend Ike, and we want you to come and check us out. We are a fun-filled, positive horror movie podcast that does reviews, news, birthdays, anniversaries. We play games. We are a ton of fun every week for you, the horror fan out there. For all of our links to our social media and the podcast platforms, just check out our link tree. It is linktr.ee/listen2screams. That is listen, the number 2, and screams. Or look us up on your favorite social media platform and podcast provider. And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by the son of the great announcer, Gordon Solie, Gennard Solie. Sir, how are you?
I'm doing good, Dave. Thanks for asking. The weather's not too bad, you know, right now, until next week.
Yeah, it's gorgeous. I'm in North Carolina. It's nice today in the 70s and can't ask for anything better.
Where in North Carolina are you at?
I'm not too far out of Raleigh, just a little bit out of Raleigh, outside of Raleigh.
I'm in Hickory.
Yeah, there you go. So, all right. Of course, we're going to talk about your dad. And your father was born in Minnesota, correct?
Yes, he was.
And he studied radio and participated in many productions and everything else through school. Did he also grow up a fan of professional wrestling?
No.
Well, short answer, right?
Yeah.
Well, so, I mean, and he served in the Air Force.
And he was a DJ.
Oh, yeah, really?
Yeah, in the Air Force.
So he continued on with that, the radio, the interest in radio communications and broadcasting.
Yes.
Which is, obviously a common thread throughout his life and his career.
Yes.
And so after serving, he settled in Tampa, Florida, and there he worked for a stringer, right, at the local paper. He was writing also.
No, actually what he did was when he got out of service, he went to Arkansas, and that's where he met my mother. He and another buddy of his met my mother and another girl. And so they kind of decided the four of them were going to get married.
Yeah. You know? Right.
Without even really knowing each other that well. So, I can't say anything about that, but just that. Yeah. Then they moved to Tampa, Florida, where he worked in radio. He worked at a car lot called Bud Shirk's, where he sold cars. And then he got into another radio station where he started to interview wrestlers.
Yeah. Well, and I wanted to ask, though, I also saw that did he announce some stock car racing
and
interview drivers? Was so he was clearly into Brian. Was the racing, did he maintain that interest on, or was it just a job at the time?
No, he loved racing. That was the main thing. He really enjoyed racing. And he used to announce this. They used to have stock car races at the fair every year. And so he announced those races. Unfortunately, they don't have them anymore, which is a shame, but that's the way things change. then he went over to Sunshine Speedway and announced over there. And then he and Frank Derby went into business together, and they had a track in Tampa called Golden Gate Speedway. And he announced there on Friday nights and Saturday nights. So that was his gig. And then while he was doing the stock car racing announcing, that's when he was approached by Cowboy Luttrell.
Yeah.
A lot of people have written, or the Grahams tried to say that they're the ones that hired him, but that's not true. It was Cowboy Luttrell that hired him. That was even before Eddie Graham came down here.
Yeah. So where did Luttrell become aware of him? Did he hear him on the radio? Did he hear him at the races? Or how did he become aware of your father?
He heard about it from them on radio from when he was interviewing wrestlers.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. You know,
because there was no real sport in Tampa at that time except for high lie. Mm-hmm. And so Dad decided to pick up doing announcing of some of the wrestlers, having come in and interview them and everything like that. So it really kind of helped promote it. And then that's how Cowboy Luttrell heard about him and eventually went to talk to him about coming on board. But at first they had Salty Saul, who was doing the announcing, and Salty just wasn't taking it seriously.
Yeah.
You know, as a lot of the announcers back in the early days really didn't take it seriously. They kind of thought it was kind of a joke in a way. I think that's the way, you know, I heard it. He finally approached my dad about, because he got rid of Salty Saul. Then he was going to put in, there's a good friend of my dad's. I can't think of his name. It'll come to me later. And put him in, tried him for a little while, didn't really. So that's when he then asked Gordon to do it. And he was doing the ring announcing at that time as well, getting paid $5 a week, you know, to announce the matches at the ring, you know, and the Fort Homily Esterly Armory, you know. And then he finally decided to use him on TV. And my dad called him up the day before, and he said, "Well, how do you want me to call this match or the matches?" Uh-huh. And Cowboy Luttrell's comment was, "Like your job depends on it." And that's just the way Luttrell was. And Cowboy Luttrell just really loved my dad. They had a really great relationship. They just gelled together. So he learned about the body, you know, all the muscles and everything on the arms, the legs, the back, anything that could be affected by the match. So, he worked out with some of the wrestlers in the ring so that they could put holds on him, so that way he could feel how the hold was and, you know, how it pulled on your muscles and, you know, stretched you out. He got a good experience in that.
Yeah. And like you said, right, he ended up working for, you know, Championship Wrestling for Florida for the Grahams.
Yeah.
And, he became the lead announcer, obviously, and the voice of Florida, right? I mean, he was there for, you know, 25 plus years. And, you know, he called matches, conducted interviews. Go ahead.
He was there from 60. So 60 to 70, 70, 80, 80 to 90, 30 years.
There you go. Okay. 30 years.
Yeah. Announcing in Florida. When they kind of forced Cowboy out, you know, and the Grahams bought in, you know, and that was an interesting story too. The reason why Eddie Graham wanted the territory is that it couldn't be invaded on three sides by anybody else's territory. Like, you know, Georgia, you've got to deal with, the state on the left, state on the right, state on the bottom, state on the top. The only way anybody could come into Florida to promote would be up in the northern part of Florida. And since they were good friends already with the group in Atlanta, they didn't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, so, right.
And Gordon, I mean, he became the face, right? The face of Florida wrestling, right? I mean, like you said, there for three decades. Did he take pride in that he was kind of the centerpiece, the you know, whatever, the straw that stirred the drink, the face of the CWF? Was that something that took pride in?
He was my dad was a very humble person, which I probably should have taken after a little bit on my dad's side. he was, I mean, to him, his job was to put the wrestlers over and to get the fans to come to the matches on Tuesday night or wherever they were going to be at. You know, so that was his main goal, was to get the place packed. He never went around and bragged and said, yeah, I'm Gordon Sully, the announcer. You know, it wasn't that way. He was very modest about it. But, you know, even though he's putting the wrestlers over, he was putting himself over at the same time, you know, just by announcing it, you know, keeping the fans on the edge of their seats. You know, there's not a lot of announcers that can do that. You know, that you would literally be on the edge of your seat listening and not saying, oh, it's a commercial. Do I need to go get a beer? Or better stay here. You know, that's one thing he was very good at, keeping the fans interested. You know, and then he started traveling up to Atlanta, and he was doing the Georgia Championship Wrestling, and then went over to Alabama, started doing announcing over at the Alabama, and then wherever else they needed him.
Yeah.
He was more the voice of the NWA. You know,
right, yeah. And I had heard kind of about his process. I had heard that when he wasn't actually talking right during his broadcast, when he wasn't actually describing the action, he was known for taking lots of notes of things that he wanted to say at some point, or, you know, possibly use. Was that kind of his process for working? Because that seems kind of unique.
Well, he never went to the meetings that they had.
Yeah.
You know, before the matches. Because he didn't want any insight of who was going to win or who was going to lose. Because the element of surprise was the thing for him. You know, let him be surprised at who won. So that way then it would translate down to the fans. You know, whereas I think a lot of the guys that are out there today, they kind of, they don't do it as well. You know?
Yeah.
Being surprised about, you know, wow, can't believe this guy won, you know? And, you know, and that's something else I think that wrestling is missing today is the interviews, you know, with the commentator, because the guys are just, you know, especially in WWE and AEW, they just get in the ring and they grab the microphone and they start talking. They're putting their, what they're going to do. But
yeah,
Dad always had them on their toes.
Right, yeah.
You know, and would say, well, that's yet to be seen. You know, get their look in their face, like, what did you just say, Gordon?
Yeah.
So I think that's something that's a lost art today. You know, but I'm not in the business, so I can't tell people what to do.
Yeah. Well, and your dad, he was always known for bringing a seriousness to wrestling, right? This almost news approach. And, you know, I mean, I've heard him referred to as, you know, the Walter Cronkite or the Howard Cosell of wrestling.
Yes.
Was that something? Was that just him? No matter what he did he want to establish the legitimacy of it and to get it over, to make it seem? I mean, it's an absurd business, right? It's so many levels. But he tried to keep it grounded.
He did. And yes, you were 100% correct. Anytime a fan would ask him, you know, that they can say, yeah, you know, I could kick that wrestler's butt. He says, I can schedule for you guys to have a match, you know, this coming Tuesday night, you know, to see how it goes, you know, and then they're all of a sudden very quickly to say, no, I'm going to be out of town that night, you know, or no, I can't do it, you know. So he always led to them to thinking that it was real. Because that was his job to do, was to make it seem as real as it can be. And he did.
Yeah.
He had a, there was, when I sold insurance, I had a customer that was blind. And we were talking about wrestling. And he told me, he says, man, he says, on Saturday nights, he says, I love to sit down, you know, in front of my TV and listen to your dad. And, you know, and everything. And I said, but you're blind. And he said, yeah, but the way your dad described a match, I knew everything that was going on. You
Well, I mean, it's got to be the biggest compliment, right, to a broadcaster.
know? Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was, when I told him that, he was like shocked, you
Yeah.
know. But yeah, he always took it very much to do the right thing for the business, you know. And now, also, they had a thing in Florida where you couldn't, a heel and a baby face couldn't live in the same apartment complex.
Yeah, right.
They had to live in separate, different apartment complexes. But now on Tuesday night, after the matches, everybody went to the Imperial Room, baby faces and heels, and they always stayed on the opposite, you know, opposite sides, you know, of the bar. You
Yeah.
know?
Yeah.
So,
Well,
but
one of the things your dad's known for is the phrase or the term suplé. For a
yes.
suplex. What do you have any idea how did that originate? What did he just try was trying to do something unique? Or he's the only announcer I've ever heard call it a suplex.
Yeah. That was just the way he called it, the way he announced, pronounced the word, you know. And yeah, nobody else has ever tried to copy that, you know, which is good, you
Yeah.
know. But yeah, I mean, a lot of the guys earlier started trying you know, copy some of his other styles, you know, but it's a crimson mask of blood, you know, it's a
Yeah.
Pierce Six bra, you know, all those. They tried using those and everything. And even Cowboy Bill Watts told Jim Ross to watch Gordon Soley,
Yeah.
you know, to learn from him. But then Jim tried to mimic him too much, and Bill didn't want that. He said,
Yeah.
if I wanted Gordon, I would have hired Gordon. You know, I said, I just want you to learn, you know, how he does it and watch him, watch his character, you know. Which is a nice compliment. I mean, Cowboy Bill Watts and my dad were good friends.
Yeah. Yeah. And then one thing I remember immensely from my childhood, because it was all in all the magazines, was in 1987, there was a trivia game out
Yes.
that had Gordon's likeness and his name on it. So do you have any idea how did that come about? Was it a something someone was working on and they inquired to him to endorse it, or how did that work?
He did it. My dad and a few friends of his did it. they decided to make that game, and they worked on it and worked on it. The unfortunate things is, and you have to excuse me for coughing.
That's
Hold
okay. That's all right.
on. No, him and Lionel, guys, Michael LeBron, but he goes by Lionel. In the radio business, he did it with him and another friend of his, and they sat and they did it. They even did a record in it, and then they promoted it. The unfortunate thing is they had it made in the United States, and I understood my dad's point. You know, he said, "I want things built here," you
Yeah.
know, but it cost them a little more than what they probably anticipated. And one of the partners, unfortunately, messed the whole thing up. He didn't send orders out to people that ordered them, and but took their money. And eventually, they found out that everything got auctioned off in an auction because he hadn't even paid the bill for the storage facility.
Huh.
Yeah. So my dad was not happy at all about that, you know. And
Yeah.
but yeah, they even the mistakes they made on some of the answers were wrong. But you know, they already did it. And my thing to my dad was, when they did it, I said, well, you got to come up with something where they can buy a pack of new cards every year or every couple of
Yeah.
years
Yeah.
to keep people updated on what's going on. You know,
Yeah.
because eventually somebody's going to go back and they're not going to know those guys back there in the back. You know,
Yeah.
they've been
Yeah.
wrestling for years. You know,
Yeah.
but I've
Yeah.
got one of the games.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I remember it because, like I said, it was all over the magazines. I mean, you know, there were a handful of games at the time, but that was the first, you know, trivia based game that I remember, and everything else, and it was, you know, kind of unique. And you know, when people talk about your dad, right? You know, people always talk about, you know, he's very serious, right? He's almost grumpy on air, and wouldn't take, you know, wouldn't handle any joking during the interviews, and didn't like that kind of stuff. And did he have little patience for guys that did that kind of, you know, goofed around? I mean, you hear about it in Memphis with Lance Russell, right? You couldn't touch Lance, and you couldn't do this and that. Did your father, did he expect the wrestlers to also have the same kind of respect for wrestling that he did?
Yeah. He never got touched, and that was partially Eddie Graham's thing. Is Eddie told the wrestlers, you don't put a hand on the announcers.
Yeah.
You know, because they're not involved in the wrestling. They are announcing the wrestling.
Right.
Yeah. You know, now, granted, he did get knocked down in Atlanta. I think it was by Piper by accident, because he was going after Morocco.
Yeah.
Morocco got in my dad's face and then he got knocked down. But other than that, I think there was only one other instance where he got bumped. But other than that, he was always clean. They never touched him.
Yeah. You know? Speaking of, what did your dad think about work? Because he worked there for a while with Piper doing color. What did he think of working with Roddy Piper?
Oh, he liked Piper. You know, he thought Piper was just a trip to work with, because Piper was quick.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah.
And it's just like with Dusty Rhodes. He enjoyed working with Dusty. But he didn't have later on, when Dusty basically kind of helped put Championship Wrestling from Florida out of business, his attitude toward Dusty changed a lot.
Yeah.
You know, because Dusty had gone up to North Carolina to do a show with Crockett, a pay-per-view. And then Dusty came back after it. And instead of going to Eddie Graham and saying, hey, we need to do this, you know, we need to get into this business, instead he went to the guys down in Florida, the wrestlers, and just basically said, you guys need to go up to North Carolina.
Yeah, right.
They pay more money. We got these, you know, big arenas, you know, these pay-per-views. We're really making a lot of money. And then all of a sudden the guys started going up there and basically killed Florida. And then when they got rid of my dad, they tried to say that he retired, but he didn't. They just came in and they told him that he was going to be doing two shows in a shooting instead of one, but he was only going to get paid for one.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, I don't think that's going to work. You know, he says, I'm doing two products. So I need to be paid for two. And they said, well, we're not going to do that. So at that point, that's when he quit. You know, he just wasn't going to take it. And, you know, he knew that came from Dusty, you know. So, you know, it's a shame, but Dusty did that everywhere he went, you know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
He would.
And like you mentioned, right? I mean, your dad, you know, he obviously worked for Florida, he worked for Georgia, Continental. The NWA in general, later, you know, he did, you know, a stint in WCW. But I read that he had an offer to go to WWE and that he turned it down. So why did he turn that offer down?
He told Vince that he goes home from the dance with the person he goes to the dance with.
Okay.
He went to the dance with, you know, Cowboy Luttrell and Eddie Graham, and that's who he was going back to. You know, he didn't... he didn't like the way Vince worked.
Yeah. You
know? So he was, you know, and I have to give him credit for that. I mean, you know, he unfortunately turned down a lot of big bucks.
Yeah.
You know, for, you know, pride. And he was, you know, not ashamed to say it. You know, somebody had something about he didn't take it because he was going to have to wear a tuxedo. Totally false. He wore tuxedos before, you know,
yeah,
so that wouldn't make sense. But You know, and plus Vince always wanted his people to listen to, he wanted them to announce the way he wanted them to announce.
Right.
And
yeah.
My dad wouldn't have worked that well with that because he wants to bring, you know, if you look at even with Jim Ross and those guys when he was with WWE, a lot of times you didn't hear anything about going on in the match. They were just sitting there chit-chatting with each other.
Yeah.
You know, and you're sitting there going, well, what happened? How did, you know, where dad was always bringing the points of the wrestling, like what it's doing to each of the body parts, you know, and my dad had no love for Ole Anderson, you know, because Ole would backstab my dad any time of the day, you know, but that was Ole. Ole did that to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know? Yep. Absolutely. I just couldn't imagine your dad working for Vince in New York. It just doesn't seem like it would have fit. You know, Vince tries to control too much and everything. And I just, I don't know. I don't think it would have been a good fit. In retrospect, he probably made the right choice there for his career. You know, and
it was a shame when Georgia Championship Wrestling let him go. You know, when Crockett bought it.
Yeah,
But Ole Anderson was with them at that time too, you know. So Ole wasn't giving my dad any love there, you know, to Crockett. I've really never found out why they didn't hire him or keep him on, considering he had such a following, you know, and considering he was so much better than Tony Schiavone. But you know. He didn't let it bother him. He just, you know, kept doing his other stuff and other shows, you know. But yeah, he used to fly out Friday night to do the shows in Atlanta, and then Saturday morning he would fly. I'm not sure if it's Saturday morning or Saturday afternoon, but he would fly to Alabama and do the show there with the Fullers, you know, and then fly back to Atlanta and do another show, and then fly back home. Yeah, so that kept him pretty busy, you know. And then later on in life, I think he was tired of flying, you know. So that's when he basically was like, that's when he quit in 92.
Yeah.
And that was also because he could not stand Eric Bischoff.
You know? Oh, I can imagine. Yeah.
You know, Eric, my dad told me a couple of stories with Eric. He said that one time Eric wasn't there, and he asked, he says, so where's Eric? And they were like, oh, he went to go get his a wisdom tooth pulled. He won't be here today at all. Well, my dad had his hip replaced, you know, after a show. And then the next morning he flew to Alabama to do a show. Then when he came back to the hospital, he stayed there until later that day, and then he did the show in Atlanta, and then he was back in the hospital. Now, he didn't let things stop him, you know, from doing his. I don't think he really ever took a vacation.
Yeah.
He did what he did was Eastern Airlines had a thing that if you took a flight somewhere, they bought round tickets, but what you do is you'd fly to one city, you'd stay overnight, you know, or a couple nights, and you flew back. Then you fly out right back out to another city. So that was his vacation. So that way he could be back for the show to tape the show on Wednesdays, or was it Thursday? No, I don't think it was Wednesdays. So he was always, you know, there. You know, it was funny because he asked me to stay at the house because my grandfather was there, and I knew this girl that was working the airline Delta, and you know, where people went through. And so I asked her, I said, when you see him next time, why don't you just tell him that that bird of his really is noisy in the morning. So he was kind of like, what's going on in our house? Yeah. You know, we always like to play practical jokes on each other. You know, I always got him more than anybody else, but one time we were driving back home, and then he said, I gotta tell you something, son. I said, what, dad? He says, Well, I just wanted to let you know, wrestling's not real. I just sat there and I turned and looked at him. I said, no shit. Excuse me.
That's all right. No, go
And I said, I knew that. He said, well, no, you didn't. I said, yeah, I did that. He said, no. I said, Dad, I had Jack Briscoe and Jerry Briscoe and Bob Roop of his roommates. Two of them were baby face and one was a heel. You know, because what I did was I rented a two-bedroom apartment. So anytime they were in town, one of them was in town, they had a place to stay and didn't have to worry about, you know, hotel room rates.
Yeah,
You know,
right.
I lucked out because I think I only paid something like $25 a month rent for my place.
Yeah.
I let them carry the load.
Yeah.
So, but he was like, so you, I said, plus I said, Dad, I painted the inside of the sportatorium and I know there's only one shower room. You know, and there's only one locker room. So I said, so you can't go there.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, your father retired, right? But I mean, here we go. He's had his memoir published. He's been inducted into the WWE, the WCW, and the NWA Halls of Fame. He's
And
recognized
George and the
in
George
Georgia
Strait.
and Georgia. Yep. Yeah, you're right. The George Tragos. I was my next one. He's recognized by the George Tragos Luke Dez Hall of Fame, the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame and Museum, the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame. He won the PWI Announcer of the Year in 97, the Observer Best Television Announcer from 1981 to 1983. When people discuss the greatest wrestling announcers of all time, the names that come up are, you know, Gordon Solie, Lance Russell, Jim Ross, and that's where the discussion ends, right? Your dad's that, you know, obviously there's, you know, a territorial flavor, right? If you grew up in Louisiana, you might like Jim Ross. If you grew up in Memphis, you might like Solie, or excuse me, Russell.
Yeah.
But your father is considered, no matter what, one of, if not the best of all time.
Yeah.
However, no, go ahead. What were you gonna
No,
say?
go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say, however, you've recently had some issues with the Cauliflower Alley Club.
Yes.
So, talk to me about this. Explain to me about these issues, how they began, and what they are, because they blow my mind.
Yeah. How that kind of started was when I went to the one of the very first, well, not one of the very first, but I had gone to several of the Legends lunch with my dad back in the early 90s. You know, it might have been 91 or 90. They were going to a restaurant, like, and it was called Ivano's, or I something like that. It was owned by one of the Malio owners. And so he was meeting Jack Briscoe, Buddy Colt, Hiro Matsudo, and Brian Blair and my dad. And he said, yeah, we're going to our lunch. It's we call it Legends Lunch. And we just sit around and talk about stories. You know, so I went to that one, the very first one of the first ones, and then I went to a couple others when I was in town because I had moved to Sarasota. And then finally, I got after Dad had passed years afterwards, I one of the guys said, "Hey, you should come to the Legends Lunch." So I did, and I was kind of taken back and shocked at it because they had Brian Blair as the main guy that started it, and then he had Jack Briscoe and Hiro Matsudo. But he didn't have my dad on it. He had my dad as a co-founder, you know, and he had Buddy Colt as a co-founder. I mean, and other people that were co-founders. And I'm like, they weren't even there. They didn't even live here, you know. And Brian and I were talking, and I said, you know, that's not right, you know. And he says, you don't know what you're talking about, you know. I said, yeah, I was at the first one, you know. But Brian and I never liked each other, just for the simple reason. Every time I ever saw him, he said, "Oh, it's the Solis kid." You know, and I finally told him one time, "You know, I got a name. It's called Gennard. You know, I'm not Solis kid." I said, "It's just rude." And then I went to the my first cauliflower club meeting. You know, they had out in Vegas. And you know, they one person asked me if I could come early, and I said, sure, no problem, I'll come help you all set up. I was more than happy to do that. And when I got there, it was like, what are you here for? I said, well, you know, Darlene asked me to come early. And, you know, I said, yeah, no problem. You know, paid for an extra night staying because I came in one day early. And, you know, they said, well, I said, what do you guys want me to do? And they said, well, right now, we don't want you to do anything. I said, okay, fine. You know, and then once we got, they got things more done, they said, would you do the door? And I said, sure, I'll greet people at the door, make sure they have their passes, and then direct them which way to go. And I got to meet everybody, yeah, which was the nicest thing, because people would, you know, compliment me about my dad and everything, which was nice.
Yeah.
And then I observed Brian Blair chewing out Scott Teal, and out in the middle of the hallway, you know. And what he was chewing him out for was that Darlene wasn't getting out and selling the raffle tickets enough, you know, that she was working on too many things. Well, he had told her to work on that, and so he shouldn't have to worry about it. She's supposed to be such a great person. She was more interested, I think, in slowing things down for Scott. I think she wanted to take that position over.
Yeah.
You know, it's just by the way I observe things.
Uh-huh.
Right. And so the way Brian was yelling at him and everything, talking down to him, I just was not impressed with Brian at all. And I had talked about doing some comedy. And he says, as long as it's good and you don't embarrass me. You know, like if anybody would get embarrassed if I screwed up, it would be me. You know, not Brian Blair. You know, so when we got back, then they thanked everybody at the awards. They named every single person that had something to do. Like one guy did the door for the movie and something else. Another guy did something. Didn't once mention my name, you know, but I was like, that's fine with me. You know, I'm not there for the credits, you know, but it would have been at least nice. Say, hey, and we also had Gordon Solie Sunshard here. And you know, we thank him for what he did, but that's neither here nor there. That's why I said I could have learned a little bit more humble from my dad. When we got back, I said to Brian, I said, you know, and because Scott had quit after that.
Yep, right.
He had just gotten the promotion and then just up and quits. Then I found out Brian had a history of that, people quitting on it.
Yeah.
Because he wants them, it's got to be his suggestion or his idea, you know. So while I was there, and I'm an organizer, I like to organize things. Mm-hmm. You know, it's even in retail, they had me go around to some of our other stores and show them how to organize their stock rooms and organize their stuff for when we took inventory, you know. And that was with the department store. And so I gave Brian a list of things that could help make it a better, you know, event. You know, just simple things like how the room should go, flow, putting up a banner that says CWF, and that's where you can take pictures, or I mean not CWF, CAC, where you can take pictures of the wrestlers next to a person, you know, that they're paying for that picture, you know, and just different things. And Darlene got hold of it, and I said, well, I said, Brian, that was for you. I said, well, I gave it to Darlene, and we don't want any of your ideas. So I was like, okay, fine. And, you know, I put the ideas up on there, but a lot of people came back and said, those are some great ideas. Yeah, but it wasn't Brian's ideas. Yeah, you know? And then Brian and I had a talk about the luncheon. I said, you know, Brian, you're holding a Legends lunch, and it was – called Legend CWF's Legends Lunch. It was supposed to be for the wrestlers that wrestled in Florida. But all of a sudden they start honoring people that were, and I'm not saying anything bad about the outlaw wrestling groups or the independent guys, because they're the ones today that really are carrying it on. Mm-hmm. But back then, you know, they weren't really considered, you know, wrestlers, you know.
Right. Yeah.
So they would, but then they started honoring these people, you know, and they're putting them on the plaque. I said, and I told Brian one day, I said, you know, Brian, the problem with your plaque is you're going to be putting it up somewhere. And I said, and people are going to look at that and they're going to say, oh, yeah, I remember this person. Remember that person? Who the hell are these people? You know?
Yeah.
They wouldn't know any of them. You know? And I said, if you want to really do a really good Legends lunch, I said, you, Jerry Briscoe, Buddy Colt, Rocky Johnson, you know, Bugsy McGraw. I said, you all should like sit up on the very front on high tops talking to people. And when you're, and then induct the two people you want to induct, say like Ravishing Rick Rude. Well, Ravishing Rick Rude's not alive today, so nobody really knows what he's like or how he even got his name, Ravishing Rick Rude. I said, so why don't you guys talk about Ravishing Rick Rude and then find out where his family lives and then mail them a plaque, you know, because you're not going to fly them down because they didn't have that kind of money, you know. And he didn't like that idea, you know. And I was like, well, that way you get this, you know, as soon as you guys are dead, nobody around is going to know Ravishing Rick Rude. So why not get his name out there, back out there for people to understand who he was, you know. And the same thing with Andre the Giant or Tony Charles, you know. But no, they wanted to honor people that were wrestling at a flea market. And I just didn't agree with that, you know. Yeah. And that's just wasn't what that whole thing was meant to be. Now he's changed the plaque to say that it's a friendship award, you know, Legends Lunch.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's changed it three times. The heading. They even put me in it. And I finally told him, I said, you don't have to put me in it. Just take me out of it. You know? So I don't care. I have enough plaques of my own stuff that I've done. So we didn't really get in, you know, we at that point, Brian and I weren't even talking. So I finally had died a couple of years ago. Oh, Howard Brody.
Uh-huh, right.
I finally had Howard Brody call him and say, hey, you and Gennard need to sit and talk. Yeah. So he finally called me and I said, look, Brian, there's a couple things before we even start talking. I said, there's no screaming or yelling. Okay. Let's talk. We got 3 points to talk about. Let's talk about these 3 points. Yeah. And talk like civilized people. And he immediately started yelling at me. And I'm not one to take that lightly. And so I just started talking over him. You know, I was like, you're going to talk over me, I'll talk over you, and we'll both be idiots. You know, and he finally hung up. And after that, he's never returned a phone call or anything. So after Waterloo, well, when I was at the first and only convention, CAC, I mentioned to Jerry Briscoe, I said, you know, Jerry, why aren't there awards named after my dad? And I said, because without a wrestling announcer to announce the matches, if you have two guys out there just wrestling with no commentary, it's very boring because you don't know what's going on. You don't know who either one of them are. Just having two guys wrestle each other, big deal. You know, and I said, and plus I said, it's the announcer that brings the crowds in, you know, especially back then because we didn't have internet. And Jerry sat there and he agreed with me on that. And then later he told me that they were going to honor my dad with his award named after him in Waterloo. So I was really thrilled about it. He said, but can you keep it a secret until we announce it? And I was like, yeah. And then COVID hit, you know. And so that didn't happen until the next year after. I think it was up next year after that. So I was very good at keeping my mouth shut on that. But no, but there's other things that Brian's done that's really kind of pissed me off. Like when COVID did happen, Brian still wanted to have the event. Well, he wasn't even thinking about the people. He was thinking about himself and what it was going to do to the CAC. Well, what are you going to do? Invite all these people and have half of them die when they leave?
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't thinking about anybody else. And so in any way, when we were at the C, when I was at the CAC, you didn't really see Brian much. He didn't come down to sit in the room with the people. He was up in his hotel room the whole time, partying with the guys, and that's how he's always been. He doesn't see that he should have to do any of the work. Well, I think if you're going to be president of something, you need to be out there doing the work as well and not expecting people, because then if you come down and yell at them, well, you weren't there to say, hey, can you do it differently? So a couple of years ago, I was looking at the CAC and I noticed that they have, I don't know, it looks like they have like 20 different awards that they could give out, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I know, because I also noticed that even the managers, Lou Bambino's not in there. A lot of guys aren't in there as managers. And then I looked at the announcers, and only two announcers were in there. One was Lance Russell, and I can't remember the other guy's name, but he was before Lance. But my dad wasn't in. It was just called the Announcers Award. Those were the only two announcers in there. Well, Brian had already been there for what? He's been there for 8 years. So I emailed him and I texted him. I said, Brian, I said, why not do an award named after my dad? Name it the Gordon Solie Award of Professional Announcers, and start putting announcers under there, And I probably emailed him at least a half a dozen times, called him a half a dozen times, I texted him, never once responded. And then so I decided to go on a campaign, try to get people to say something to Brian or anything. So Brian's little henchman that works there with him, at the last, not this year, but last year's Waterloo, he came up to me and he says, your dad's only going to get this one award, only going to get the one award he got. He's not getting any more awards at CAC. And I said, it wasn't an award, it was an honorary. They honored 10 people from Florida Wrestling. It was never given an award, it was just being, he was honored, back in 1996. My dad wasn't even there because my stepmother was dying, so he was home with her. So I brought that up, but so he said, no, we're giving it to the, it's going to be called the Jim Ross Award. And he says, and Jim Ross after that will be the one to name who'll be on it. And I mean, Jim Ross is also the one that said nobody can touch Gordon. We're all fighting to be second at the Hall of Fame. And that just really kind of pissed me off more. That was like saying, basically F you, hard F you your dad. And he and somebody came and said, yeah, but Brian really likes your dad. Same it is that he said, Brian doesn't like you and he doesn't like your political stance. And I don't care if Brian doesn't like me. It shouldn't be about me. It's about my dad. About honoring him. So I mean, Brian's a very narrow-minded person. I mean, when he lost the race to be county commissioner, he immediately went on the attack of the guy that beat him. The guy that beat him was gay. And after the race was all over and he lost, the other guy had accused Brian of taking money, other people paying for like signs and everything, billboards and everything. And so Brian afterwards, he said, well, I never said he was gay to anybody. I didn't bring that up. I didn't bring up that he probably got AIDS from his lover. How cheap and how low is that? And to go and say
Really?
that. And then after that, his comment was, make sure you buy my action figure. It's coming out soon. Again, he's just thinking of himself, when he made that comment. So I put up My dad's picture when he died, on the 27th.
Right, yeah.
I put that up on the CAC website, and I said it's a shame that the CAC has disrespected my dad by not, saying that this was the 24th year that he had passed, and they took it down. Which I thought was very. And then I get a call from not a call, but a text from this one girl. I want to call her Arena Rat, she goes around with a bunch of the girls to all the different events that are going on, and she's on the board, and so she wanted to criticize me for that, and I was like, I just basically told her, I said, I'm sorry, but you're just an ass, because I had blocked her from writing anything on the Gordon Solie page,
Yeah.
But yeah, that's so I will. Well, let's put it this way. We as a family will never accept an award from the CAC again, ever.
Yeah.
If Jim Ross wants to give us an award, we're going to turn it down.
Yeah. It's peculiar to me. I mean, that obviously, it seems like for whatever reason, right? Brian doesn't like you, but then he's punishing your father and his career for it.
Yeah.
And can't put that aside to it just, and not just, right, the organization in general, right? I mean, but he's obviously the president. So, the Bucks, it falls on him.
Yeah.
And that's, that's, I mean, on one hand, it's the most wrestling thing in the world, but it shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Because, the CAC is supposed to stand for something different, right? And that's a shame.
Yeah. Well, and he has a tendency to, alienate a lot of people. And there's a lot of wrestlers out there that to Brian's face, they're very friendly, but behind his back, they're just calling him all kinds of things.
Yeah. Right.
They said even his one person in the organization a couple of years ago that was on the board. Brian called him up, said, bring the checkbook up. We need to pay a guy his airfare. Guy told him, he said, that's not right. This guy isn't doing anything. He said, well, I promised him that we'd pay for his airfare. So that came out of the CAC money, which that's not what the money is supposed to be there for. The money is there to help people. He threw the checkbook down the floor at Brian's feet and says, I quit. Of course, then he went back later and begged for his job back. And Brian gave it back to him because Brian needed somebody else to do all the work. He doesn't do it. So, I mean, there's a lot of dissent, and Brian even said he would quit. But, and I can't remember who the girl was. He said that should replace him. He said, but I'm going to stay as president, and then down the road I'll quit and she can take over. And they're like, no, this is not how it works. And they had enough board members to do it, but they all backed out, which again was a shame. They should really do is, and I was bored. I was a president of a board, and I stayed on for 3.5 years. And I did $250,000 worth of work. It was an HOA board to the community. So I was one of the most well-liked presidents because I did all the work. We got things done and we didn't kill people. If they didn't pay their dues, we worked with them. Whereas the other president before me would send them right to the attorney. And I said, well, great. Now, if they can't pay us our dues, how can they pay the attorney fees and our dues and all these late fees? I said, let's work with them. Get them on a payment plan, so that's how I work. I like to give people the chance, the break, and help them out, to me, the CAC has lost its way with Brian. It's more of a party. And this hotel they're at, I heard that not last year, year before last, they had steak and shrimp Well, how can you cook that many steaks and keep them warm when you got like what 300 people in the room and you got shrimp that's been soaking? You know, they said it was the shrimp was like soggy. They said the steaks were cold, you know. Whereas at Iowa, we did things like pork chops, you know, chicken, you know, stuff that was easy to keep warm and everything. So I mean it was much we handled it a lot better than he did, and plus we used to do, and I'm not on the board anymore. We also did I did metal pitchers with the wrestlers that we were honoring, and I had their photos transferred onto metal, and then I did metal cups with their faces on them. Or not the faces, but a complete picture of them. And so we that's what we gave out is I did raffles for those, you know, and the first year we made over $900 raffles for them. I don't think they're doing them anymore, but you know, it was just something I thought was better. And the last year that I was there, I actually gave away 8 metal cups with wrestlers on them as a fan giveaway at the dinner. That was called, I call it the fan appreciation, because you need to appreciate your fans, because without your fans, you have no wrestling. You know, you have no audience. So I like that idea, and that's what I was stretching on. Whereas I thought those metal pitchers were much better than what Brian was doing. They do the belt. You know, so one person gets a belt and all these people put money in. Whereas I had it to where we had 12 different pitchers. And mugs, and the last one I did, I think it was up to 18, and then the 8 free mugs, you know. So people felt more like they had a chance to win something, you know, because of that, because there were more items being given away, you know. So it was nice. I met a really lot of nice people there on it. But Brian just the CAC should be working about, and this is something I don't understand. They finally did an independent wrestling award from, you know, one of the independent guys, and that's good, especially today, because you've got, you know, like the guys from over there in Salem, your group of boys over there. I can't remember their names. The guy that owns the car dealership. You know who I'm talking about? The wrestle here in North Carolina.
No, I'm not sure what you're talking about.
He's the guy that does the thing on Thursday, on the Thursday after Thanksgiving, that big event.
The gathering and all that.
Not the one in Charlotte, but that the other. Yeah, he's got his own wrestling group, and they're good guys. I mean, they put on a good show, and he's got a good working relationship with the AEW, where some of their guys will come down and wrestle with their guys. And they draw a big crowd. You know, when they were at Hickory, they had the place was sold out. You know, but to me is if a wrestler in that group gets hurt, they should be able to depend on the CAC to help them out financially. You know, but the CAC has a thing that they only want to help out the guys that were in WWE, WCW, you know, type thing, instead of helping out independent guys, because everybody starts out as an independent guy when they're starting to wrestle, you know, and so they need to be protected as well, you know, and you know, they're not making as much money, and the guys that are in the, you know, the big boy club, you want to call it that, they're making a ton of money. And if they get hurt in the ring, Vince is taking care of them. You know, he's paying their medical bills. Now, granted, when once they're out of wrestling, Vince isn't, but that's where the cauliflower. But then also, a lot of these guys run out of money. Well, it's not because they had bad luck. It's just they piss their money away. You know, and there's some of them that are smart, like, Edge is smart, but Chris Jericho, you know, he's invested his money and he's got it put away, and he helps out a lot of people. Jerry Briscoe is one. He and Jack, they have a thing. save your money. You never know down the road, you know, and that's just the way that was. But these guys, a lot of the guys just piss their money away. Like the Nasty Boys, they piss their money away. So, I mean, it's the CAC needs to go back to helping them instead of having a big party every year. You know, downgrade the party a little bit. I don't know. You know, I could be totally wrong on that. But I just think that, you know, it's everybody wants to take a little money from everybody. You got the, you got SICK that has their function going on now in July, before, or is it May? No, May or June, maybe May or June. And then you got the Tragus Museum, you know, the Hall of Fame. And then right after that, 3 weeks later, you got Cauliflower. You know, and there's just so much money you can pass around. You know, a person can't afford to go to three events, you know, because if they are, they're pissing their money, you know, down the toilet. And then for a wrestler to ask for $60 for an autograph is ridiculous. Yep. These people, the fans paid for them. They paid their salaries. You know, that's why one thing I asked my dad a long time ago, I said, do you ever get tired of fans coming up to you? And he says, no, they're the ones that pay my salary. He says, I have time to talk to them. Yeah. You know, so, but yeah, I just think it's just, there just needs to be a little bit, you know, more thought into it instead of just party, 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 you know, because I think Vegas is the worst place to have it. I think the Waterloo, I think the thing in Salem and the one in Charlotte is excellent because the people are right there. Where in Vegas, you know, wrestlers are like, okay, let's go over, let's head out to the casinos. Let's, you know, take a tour, you know. Whereas Waterloo, we only got one big hotel. That's where everybody stays. So you had an opportunity to sit down and talk with Mark Henry. You had an opportunity to sit down and chit chat with Jerry Briscoe or, Thunderbolt Patterson, mm-hmm. you know. And those are the people you really want to be able to sit and talk with.
Yep.
But Vegas, like I said, everybody's going to go, you know, people are going to go to the casino. People are going to go to other bars. Yeah, you know, so it's kind of a shame. You know, if anything, they should maybe hold it in Tampa, you know, at the casino down there, because then everybody, a lot of the guys do live in Florida, you know, but I don't know. It's just my thoughts, you know, and I'm not running things, so I'll just throw out ideas.
Yeah, I mean, nostalgia's become a business, and everybody seems that they just want to get a piece of the pie, instead of, you know, instead of doing what's best necessarily. They, you know, want to try to make a few bucks sometimes, yeah. And you know, and I mean, I guess it is what it is, but it's just I don't know. It's a shame to me, you know. Whatever, I don't have a dog in the fight, but it's a shame to me that things happen the way they do, and your father with his career and what he's done and the influence he's had on the business can't be recognized, right? Things can't be, you know, we can't put the bullshit aside to recognize someone who clearly needs recognized.
Yeah.
And you know, whatever.
That's, well, and I'm going to be my dad's biggest supporter out there. And, you know, just getting him into the Hall of Fame at George Tragus and Lou Thesz, it is actually a real Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
you know, right. It has, you know, products in there that guys, you know, there's wrestling trunks or belts or shoes, whatever. And that's why I made up, you know, I had my plaques that my dad had gotten. I had them send them back to me, and I made up a really nice plaque there that I sent to them and I paid for. And it was has a picture of my dad, and then it has a saying about my dad. I did some research, put some sayings in there that another person actually wrote about my dad. And then underneath, I got 30 little plaques that each person who wins can have their name put on there. You know, and 30 years I'll be gone, so I won't worry about it after that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just keeping him. Where people know him out there. I was a little disappointed with Jim Ross on one thing. He in his Wikipedia or whatever, I think that's that, he had put in that once he had gone to work for WWE full time, that he had become the greatest. Well, just because you work for, you know, just because you're in there for so many more years doesn't mean you've surpassed the other person. The other person is, you know, Jim didn't draw fans in. You know, when he actually started announcing was in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so the internet, I think, was pretty much set that time. And so it was more my dad and the guys before my dad, like Lance. And my dad's always considered him and Lance to be tied as both the greatest. My dad had a lot of respect for Lance.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping next year that the George Tragus will honor him. I was a little shocked with them when they honored, put Conrad in there.
Yeah.
But I only have one vote. So, and I think it was more done because they wanted more publicity out there. But to be honest with you, I don't really think Conrad drew more anybody else out there. You know, I heard there was more complaints about him being on there, being recognized.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
again, I only had one vote, and my vote went for Lance Russell. And it will go again for Lance Russell this year, this time. You know, I wanted him actually before Tony. Like I said, I can only vote one.
Right. Yeah.
Well, but right now, but I am working on some videos of, I have over 60 16 millimeter films of championship wrestling from Florida from the. That we're taking, my brother took at the Armory. And some of them were used in the shows, but a lot of them weren't. But I have those. And I'm right now working on having them all put on, transferring it all over to, I should say DVDs, but they're being, you know, formatted on DVDs or whatever.
Yeah.
So we can stream them and also sell them. And it will be of basically the era of the 70s. Yeah. So we got a lot of the good guys, you know, we got Dusty Rhodes, we got Jack Briscoe and Jerry Briscoe, Dirty Dick Slater, just name it, we've got them. But the only ones I won't put in will be any Brian Blair.
Yeah. Well, that's exciting. Yeah. And like I said, you'll keep fighting, right? You're the guy that's defending your dad's legacy and keeping it alive. And that's as you should. And,
Well, and, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I plan on writing a story for the wrestling magazine on his 25th anniversary of his passing.
Yeah.
You know, and because when I was doing a lot of research on my dad, I noticed that some of the magazines back in the 60s, man, he was all throughout him. You know, there was one magazine, I think I counted him in there 27 times. You know, no announcer's ever been in a magazine that many times, you know, in wrestling.
Yeah.
You know. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, like I said, that's exciting. Keep me abreast on the transfers, and I'll help you plug them.
Okay.
That's exciting just to see that footage. And I know people that listen to my show would love to know about that. But is there a way, right? You get out there and you're doing things, right? You're obviously doing a lot to support your dad's legacy and everything. Is there a way that people can, what's the best way for them to follow to keep track of what all you're working on and anything to do with the legacy of your father?
Well, I would say my Facebook, but I'm on there politically too. And I don't want to turn people off.
Yeah.
But I am going to have a podcast. It's going to be called No Nonsense, Just Common Sense. You know, I'm going to have some wrestling, but once I get that up, I will be talking about it on there, but then by then the election will be over And I won't be posting any political on my Facebook anymore.
Yeah.
Just too many haters out there. So, and you know, like they always say, when you got a keyboard in front of you, it's easier to spew hate than love sometimes.
That's right. Yeah.
So, this will be my last political thing that I'm going to, you know, I just don't want the man coming back in.
Yeah.
I think our country needs a break.
Yeah.
And they just go back to the 60s where we all work together with each other. You know, don't know if that'll ever happen, but let's hope.
Yeah.
You know, but what I'll do is I'll keep you abreast of what's going on.
There you go. Yep.
And then I will get you more information on as the tapes come out. As you know,
absolutely.
We're in the DVD, we're going to stream them. I might even stream on my own podcast, or not my own podcast, but on my Facebook page, or on my dad's Facebook page. That's probably the best place to read what I'm going to do. It's on the Gordon Solie Facebook page.
Okay, there you go. That's where we'll direct everybody. Then hit that Gordon Solie Facebook page. Like I said, yeah, keep me abreast. I will make sure that I, you know, mention on my podcast, on my social media, and help spread the word on anything, you know, the videos, anything else you're working on. And that comes up, and I would love to help spread that word. And thank you for joining me, talking to me about your dad. Again, you know, I'm so afraid sometimes that guys that had such a huge impact on wrestling, I'm so afraid that over the course of time, you'll get the more and more you go, they get forgotten, right? If there's not people talking about them and mentioning them and keep them in the forefront, and
Kevin Sullivan.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a mind he had.
Absolutely. You know? Yeah.
And he didn't even get an award from them, from CAC, until 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and he should have been given an award a long time ago. You know, but you're 100% correct. Out of mind, you know, people forget about him.
Hey, it's Bob Smith, and guess what? The Outdated Wrestling Hour is now part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. But hey, no fear, you're still going to hear the unique guests, comedy, music, authors, journalists, funny people. Who knows who's going to end up on the Outdated Wrestling Hour? Remember, it's all new and all old. So check it out in the WrestleCopia Podcast Network and wherever you get your podcasts. Listen if you know what's good for you.
Hey everybody, Gene Jackson here, inviting you to check out the Retro Wrestling Review, where each week I'm joined by some great co-hosts who help me review classic episodes of USWA Championship Wrestling, and right now we are doing week-by-week reviews of 1993. But we don't just do reviews, sometimes we get a chance to interview some of the people who were there and lived it, plus do watch-alongs. It's a lot of fun, so check out new episodes that drop every Wednesday at WrestleCopia.com. And to find links to everything associated to the podcast, you can go to uswapodcast.com.
All right, I'm back here on Wrestling Nostalgia. Thank you to Jonard Soli. Soli, I don't know why I keep saying it. Like, I kind of put like this little French twist. I don't know what that is. Thank you to Jonard for coming on and talking about his dad, Gordon Soli. It was a lot of fun getting that and getting to some of his frustrations with some of the exposure and recognition of his father. So, you know, it's kind of eye-opening to hear his side of that. So, all right, everybody, make sure you follow me on X. I'm at The Dave Dynasty. That is the best way to follow me on social media to keep track of all I do here on the shows, any appearances I have on other podcasts, any posts I make with, you know, pictures, news clippings, dates, historical facts, etc., etc. So make sure you follow me there. As I mentioned earlier, go check out all of the WrestleCopia network of podcasts. The shows are all fun. They shine a light on wrestling history. You're going to enjoy them all. So go check them out. You can look them up on your favorite podcast platform or go to WrestleCopia.com to check those out. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Go to ClassicWrestling.net or download their app on all of your devices. All right, on my next episode, which will come out the Wednesday following this, my guest will be Jeannie Clark. We discuss how she got the name Lady Blossom in WCW. We talk Chris Adams, Steve Austin, and much, much more. You're going to want to check that out.
She was a lot of fun to have on the show. It was such an honor. She's such a kind, sweet lady, and so much fun to talk to, and I do hope to talk to her again in the future. All right. Thank you, everyone, for your listen, your support, your follows, your interactions. It means the world to me and makes this so much more enjoyable to do. It's not just me on here, you know, getting to talk to people, which although, you know, that's rewarding and fun enough as it is. But I like hearing from you guys that you're enjoying it. I like hearing your constructive criticism. I like hearing your memories, your inputs, the interaction, the exchange, the conversations online on social media and everything else really are highlights to me. So keep that up. Make sure you tell your friends, help spread the word. Let's help keep Wrestling Nostalgia growing. Because, you know, I think we got some great interviews here, and I think anybody you know that is a wrestling fan will want to hear them. So make sure you tell your friends. So until next episode, guys, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.